It's Monday.
Shh, be very, very quiet. It's Ginny. She's in her natural habitat. Yes, she's with someone, but who is she with? All we know for sure, it's Monday, and she's drinking a mocha. It must be Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.
Alex Ferrari, you're a very successful man. I'm wondering, what is the first thing that you do when you get out of bed on a Monday?
Generally, the first things I do on a Monday is sneak out of the house, go into my office that's in the back, and I sit down and I generally will check my stats on my websites and my podcasts and things like that. And then I either write for an hour or I meditate for an hour. Either way, I meditate probably anywhere between 2 to 3 hours a day, every day. I find it really helps center me and helps me on my just daily journey in life. After that, I work getting my girls ready for their school breakfast, all that kind of good stuff. And then once that's all done, my Mondays are generally me putting together all the podcasts of the week for myself and my website, Indie Film Hustle. And I really look forward to Mondays. I know a lot of people don't, but I'm one of those lucky guys who actually enjoys what they're doing currently and running a podcast, multiple podcasts, as well as Indie Film Hustle, and helping people on their filmmaking journeys and screenwriting journeys has brought me a tremendous amount of peace and fulfillment. So I truly love my Mondays now.
What I love about what you just said, that you said you meditated 2 to 3 hours a day. So meditating for 2 to 3 hours a day, as for someone as busy as you, I find that fascinating. Is it like a mantra or affirmation that you meditate with, or what styles of meditation do you take upon in that time?
I don't have a specific style of meditation. I just close my eyes and just, you know, empty my mind, Bruce Lee style. And that's basically it. I don't do any mantras generally, but the meditation, a lot of people tell me when they like, oh, I'm meditating for 15 minutes in the morning or 15 minutes at night. And I used to do that as well. The problem with that is, and it's not a problem. Look, if you're doing that, it's better than nothing. But if you want to really reap the rewards of meditation and reap what it can do for you in your life, whether it be in your business or in your own personal life, you have to go for longer stretches and you have to do more of it. So a lot of people are surprised because of the workload that I have, that I do have the time to do 2 or 3 hours of meditation a day. I do wake up extremely early. I wake up either 4 to 5 o'clock in the morning. So, but wow. I also go to bed at like 9:30. I do get my 6-7 hours of sleep, but I like waking up early in the morning because you get much more work done. No one bothers you at that time. If I wake up at 4:30, there's an automatic hour meditation thrown in there because I don't have to be out until around, you know, another couple hours before I have to be out helping my wife with the kids. And then I start writing, or I'll be working on podcasts, or I'll be working on my blog or something along those lines. But to really reap the rewards of meditation, as I found them to be, is a longer stretch. I think the longest stretch I've ever done in one sitting, it's about 2.5 hours. I think the most I've ever done is close to 5 hours in a day. I'm kind of hoping to get to the 8 to 10 hour day, not a day, but a day of doing that, because I do have to work. But I do want to get to that point where that I could sit down on a weekend and meditate for 8 or 10 hours to see what would happen within myself. Because the longer I've meditated, the rewards have been much larger. If that makes any sense at all, the rewards being the centeredness, the mindfulness, the awareness of what's going on, how to handle the stresses of life. You know, I just had a very stressful thing happen to me the other day where I got so angry that was shaking. But whereas that anger normally I would have held on to it and festered it and started lashing out at people around me because of it, I was able to process that within an hour and it was gone. And it was fascinating because I have 2 6-year-olds. Anger is part of the deal. That's just part of, you know, raising children. As any parent listening out there understands, you're going to get pissed off. And by the way, that situation had nothing to do with my family or my girls. But so many people, and I was the first one to do this, is that you get that anger and you start thinking about other people, how they've wronged you or how they do this to you, and you start festering it inside of you. And at the end of the day, you're only hurting yourself. You're not hurting the other person at all. So it's very easy to say this, by the way, because I've heard this. I was hearing this years ago, decades ago even, and it's very easy to say, but actually to put it into practice is a whole other thing. And when that anger came in, and I literally had not been this angry in years, just years, I got it in and I worked through it, and it literally just flowed through me. But you have to work through it. You can't ignore it. And meditation helped me to do that. This constant state of peace that meditation brings into your life allows you to deal with that in a way that is constructive. And we're all human beings. We're all going to have certain emotions, but it comes in and it goes out. And it was the first time I'd ever done it, because I've only been meditating this heavily for about a year now. Before then, it was a little bit more sporadic. But when I started going down my practice of doing it every day, this is the first time I'd kind of been challenged with this anger situation. And other than that, you know, I found that most of the anger that I held on to prior was gone. So I don't generally hold on to anger anymore. I get angry like any other human being, but it doesn't stick with me. It flows through. So that's what the power of the meditation does for me. And it focuses me a tremendous amount of what I need to do. And a lot of people always ask me, how do you do what you do with Indie Film Hustle? How are you able to produce as much quality content and put it all out there, and you do everything pretty much yourself? How do you do it all and have a family and have a personal life and do everything that you do? And believe it or not, taking those 2 or 3 hours a day to meditate has a big part to do with it.
It's fantastic. A few things that you touched on there, Alex, but what I found interesting is I've interviewed quite a few people in my radio/podcasting career. I think I'm nearing 1,000. And some of the most successful people, or who I perceive to be successful, now, obviously, we have different perceptions of success as human beings, but I think one of the things that really stand out to me is a lot of the successful human beings who achieve a lot of the goals that they set out to do, they get up early, they meditate, and they do some form of a creative activity in the first few hours of their day, which seems to be something that you do too.
Exactly. I've noticed that too. I've studied a lot of quote unquote successful people, and many of them do meditate. Many of them. It is a common thread with a lot of big CEOs and entrepreneurs and things like that. And believe me, I was not someone who liked to sit down for, you know, 10 minutes and meditate. It would drive me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, as you get older, I think it's like, it comes when it's ready. You know, I know a lot of 20-year-olds that could meditate. I could have never in a million years meditated when I was 20 years old. I was bouncing off the walls. For me, at least, when I finally discovered the power of what it does for me in my life, and I just see the rewards of it. I just see the fruits of the labor, if you will, because you know what? Sitting down for an hour at a time, and sometimes longer, to meditate, for a lot of people, that's a chore. For me, I truly enjoy it. Now I'm like, oh, this is, you know, oh, I got an hour. Let me just sneak in an hour here real quick, or at least let me sneak in another 30 or 40 minutes or something like that while I render this thing out, or when I output it, and I'll just go and meditate. It's a wonderful thing. But yeah, it is something that a lot of successful people do.
And I think on that too, you mentioned that a moment that you went through when you were angry recently and how you dealt with it within an hour. I think that's also a contributing factor to successful people, because I guess when you think of life and all the baggage you take on with you emotionally, physically, whatnot, and you carry with you throughout your life, and obviously when a certain moment comes up, it's not going to be that particular moment that you feel that emotion to. There's going to be unresolved emotions from past experiences that are going to pile up on that. So I think when you meditate or you take that time to reflect, your load essentially emotionally is lighter. So you can put your focus, your time, your energy into things that you want to do. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're angry all the time, your mind is angry. So it can't focus on being creative. It can't focus on being of service to people within the work that you're doing, whether that be entertaining them, writing for them, creating a blog, creating a podcast. You can't be of service if you're angry all the time. And trust me, one of my favorite comic book characters is the Hulk. I mean, I'm a huge Hulk. I have Hulk statues in my office. But the odd thing is, the other spectrum, my other favorite character in in sci-fi, you know, kingdom is Yoda. So I have Yoda and I have the Hulk, both green, obviously, but both are in the opposite states of being. One is completely out of control with rage. The other one is in complete peace and control of themselves. So it's funny that I've chosen those two characters as the characters that I identify the most with, where now I am starting to identify myself more with Yoda. Not that I'm a sage or anything like that, but at least the peaceful aspects of him, of that character, of that creation. I know they're just characters in a story, but that's what we all do. We all attach ourselves to stories and to characters and stories. But I still love the Hulk because of the strength and the rage that he has within him. But you can't deny the Hulks that are inside of us. You have to learn how to process it, because we all have the green monster inside of us. But I also think that we all have a Yoda inside of us as well.
Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at Conair.com and search Unbound.
The Jenny Show. Now's your chance to run. Run very fast.
I loved a few of the things that you've said in our conversation so far. One thing, partaking to the fact that you said that when you were in your 20s, you were bouncing off the walls and you were kind of, you couldn't even fathom the fact that you'd...
Call a spade a spade. I was an idiot. I mean, we're all in the 20-year-olds, we're all morons. Sorry. Sorry for all the 20-year-olds out there. You're probably a lot better off than I am. I wasn't 20, but I was a moron.
Well, let's go back to your moronic self and to where you are today. Can you talk about a moment in your life where you made a huge shift in the way that you think? And tell me about that experience.
About a year ago.
Wow.
About a year ago, I made that huge shift the second I started meditating for over 2 to 3 hours a day. It was a complete mind change in the sense of how I looked at life and what I was doing. But, you know, even going back a little bit farther, maybe a little bit, something a little bit more concrete. When I was 41, I was attached to a film project as a director, one of many that I've been attached to over the years. And again, this project fell apart again later in the production. I looked at myself, I said, I can't wait around anymore. I'm not 20 years old. I don't have all the time in the world. And if I want this dream of mine to direct the feature film to finally be done, I just got to get up off my ass and do it. And what I did was at that point called a friend of mine and I said, hey, you know, I want to make a movie about your life. She's a comedian, stand up. Her name's Jill Michelle Million. I said, I want to make a movie about it and I want to make it in this kind of style and let's go shoot it. And within a month later, we were shooting a movie. And that movie has since then, I crowdfunded it. So it didn't really cost a whole heck of a lot from us, as well as selling it to Hulu, as well as selling it internationally and then selling it ourselves through self-distribution on iTunes and Amazon and Google and all those places. So this little thing that I decided to say, like, you know what, I'm not going to, this dream of being a feature film director, and I think you can attach any dream to this analogy, is you feel that it's this giant mountain, that you have to climb, that's this mammoth thing, and you put so much weight on it and so much things that you attach, all these emotions you attach to the dream, the poor dream, it's not really built for this. And you make it up, you make something bigger than what it is. So at the point of that, I was like, you know, because always before it was like, well, I need to have this much money to make a movie and I need to have these kind of actors and I need to have this. And you create all these obstacles for yourself, which most people do when following a dream. And I decided to throw all of it away and just say, what is the minimum thing I need to tell a story? One, I need a story. Two, I need some actors. Three, I need some locations and a camera and a sound guy. Okay, great. That's what I'm going to use. And I decided to light the movie myself. I shot with two cameras. So basically the entire crew was three people in addition to the cast. And I shot it in 8 days. And I have never been a cinematographer before, but had enough technical skill over the years that I felt that I can do it justice. And I just went out and did it. And after I did it, I was like, wow, this wasn't that hard. And then I recently did my second movie, which was shot at the Sundance Film Festival called On the Corner of Ego and Desire, where I literally went out with a camera and a group of three people, again, a crew of 3 to 4 people, and shot an entire movie at the Sundance Film Festival, which is something no one had ever done before. And it was shot in about 4 days. So now I'm emboldened to just like, oh, I can go make a movie whenever I want. There's no limitations now. So because of that mentality, very few things scare me anymore, because I was able to conquer that first little, which was a big monster for me. Once I conquered it, I was like, oh, I can just go out and do whatever I want, whenever I want. And that empowerment is invaluable in life, because you combine that kind of fearlessness with 2 or 3 hours of meditation a day, you're starting to become a very powerful person within your own life. And that's all we can always hope for, is to be a powerful person within your own life, where you can achieve not only your goals, but be able to be of service and help other people along the way. But that only comes from self-awareness and conquering your own demons. And I haven't conquered them all by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm definitely on the way. I'm on my way there.
Was there ever a time, Alex, that you hated Mondays?
Yes.
It's just fascinating when I talk to guests about this, because a lot of the guests that I interview are very fortunate enough and blessed enough to be living a life that they love and having a job that they love, or they don't really see it as a job. But obviously there was a time that things weren't quite the same and quite the opposite. So I'm just curious to know, like, what was that like for you, and what did it look like?
Well, first of all, I don't know if you know this, and I'm sure you do, that most people die on Mondays.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I only found that fact out after I started this podcast, because a guest of mine, Michelle Sora, said, by the way, did you know that suicide rates are highest on Mondays? And I knew it was the highest rate for calling in sick.
Well, yeah, it is on the calling in sick, and it is for suicides, but it's also for just natural deaths.
Natural deaths too.
Natural deaths are more on Mondays than any other day.
Wow.
Because psychologically, your body's like, well, it's Monday, I can die on Monday. I can't die on a Friday. The weekend is coming. I can't die on a Saturday or Sunday. That's just crazy talk. But Mondays is the day that most people die on the planet, which is fascinating. But to answer your question, yes, I had a lot of times in my life I worked in jobs I did not like and didn't want to go into every day. I've been promptly fired from both staff positions I've ever been in, which is something I'm somewhat proud of, honestly, because it actually propelled me into places where I needed to be. Both times when I was fired, I started other chapters in my life, which made me who I am today. When you're doing work, and even when you're working for yourself, sometimes you have a client you don't want to deal with. Mondays are a pain in the ass, and you just don't want to deal with it because the weekends are the weekends. I was lucky enough never to have to work a desk job or something like that for longer than a year at a time before getting fired. But I did dread it. I did dread Mondays sometimes, because it was like, oh, I'm just on that rat race. I'm in that, you know, got to just get up and do it. And, you know, and if I feel like Groundhog's Day, it just again and again and again and again. And Monday is the catalyst for that. So poor Mondays get a lot of bad. It gets a bad rap. It's just a day. You know, it is just a day. You know, arguably in many calendars, Sunday is the beginning of the week. It's just all relative. It's just a day. It's something psychological. Now I love Mondays. I absolutely love my Mondays, because the weekend is the time where I'm with my family and we're running around and I get exhausted, you know, dealing with twin girls, you know, going to birthday parties and doing all this stuff. And I love enjoying spending time with my kids and my family, but I love what I do so much that I want to come back. I want to get to the office, my office, so I can start working, so I can start being productive, so I could be of value to my audience and to the people who follow me, and hopefully make a little bit of difference in the world. And that is what drives me. So now Mondays are just another day for me. It really, you know, doesn't make a difference if it's Wednesday or Monday, other than what's on my schedule to do. But yes, to answer your first question, this is a long-winded answer to your question. Yes, there was moments in my life that I did not like Mondays. And let's not even get into when I was in school. Oh, I hated Mondays.
It's just fascinating. I love asking that question because it's even for me when I had a corporate job, it was the same with you. Every day was Groundhog's Day. I wanted to punch my boss and his boss in the face every day. But, you know, I didn't want to because it wasn't very ladylike to do that. I thought about it a lot, probably daily. And I think when you're thinking about punching your boss rather than creating a life that's happy for you, you know something's up. And that's what started my meditating life as well. But moving on to other things that kind of help you get through a Monday or kind of get through anything really is a great support network. So, Alex, I'm curious to know who the five closest people are in your life, who you spend the most time with, and if you could use one word to describe each person.
I'm a very boring person, so I'm not going to have five people that are that, but I will say my wife is number one, and she's the one that grounds me. She is the yin to my yang. As cheesy as that might be, I am the dreamer. She is the grounded person. So I live in the clouds. She lives on the ground. And she is the reason why I'm able to do what I do and gave me the opportunity to be able to build up my company to the place where now it is a serious company. You know, it is supporting our family, but I couldn't have done it without her. In all honesty, I have a few friends that I talk to, and they are great friends to talk to when I have a problem or when I have an issue that I need to work through from their expertise. But generally on a daily basis, it's my wife, and she is my support team. And I am for her as well as my family, just my girls and you know, my twin girls who in their way support me dramatically and in other ways want to destroy me.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it kind of is that yin and yang thing where part of them, they just want to, you know, devour
they're just like,
you.
Like, daddy, we love you, but we need to go see the fireworks on July 4th. And I don't care how tired you are.
No, I hear you. I hear you, Alex. Let's move on to some lighter questions. Do you take your phone to the bathroom with you?
I do. I'm horrible, but I do. I'm trying to be better at it. But when I'm in the bathroom, I am generally watching videos on YouTube or checking my email. I don't hang out in social media, which is good, too much. I use social media for work and for my business. I don't use it much for whatever other people use it for. So it, for me, it's just like you won't find a picture of my family anywhere on my Facebook page, anywhere, ever. It's all about work and working with the brand and providing value to my audience through those networks. But I don't sit there. Occasionally, you'll fall down the Facebook rabbit hole. Occasionally, you're like, everyone's like, oh, what's this? Hey, what's this? Oh my God, it's an hour I've been on the toilet. But generally speaking, I do. And YouTube is something I'm constantly educating myself, watching videos of that are educational and yet also funny because, you know, who doesn't like a good cat video?
No, absolutely.
Or something that makes you laugh. But yes, I do take it, but it's something that I am avoiding doing. I'm trying to lessen it more and more.
Sounds very reasonable. I was actually going to ask you, my next question was, have you ever received a friend request on Facebook from someone you didn't particularly like?
Yeah, I have.
And what have you done? Do you accept it?
I ignore them because I always, if they ever run into me, I could just say, dude, I get so many requests because of my website. I'm sorry. Must have just fallen through the cracks. So, you know. That's basically what I would say.
Well, that's fair enough.
But I'm also, I'm generally not very two-faced. So if I don't like you, you're not in my life. I'm at the point of my life now where I don't put up with that. So if I don't like you, if you're toxic, if you're a person that is not being of service or humble or a person that provides some sort of comfort or value in my life, where, and I could do the same for them in a very symbiotic relationship style, I don't generally have you in my life. I don't have the time. I just don't have the time for energy suckers like that or people like that. I did in my former life. I was constantly, I was surrounded by these kind of people. For whatever reason, I kept them around in my life. But when I started, there was one person 7 years ago that I had known for about 3 years that was a super toxic human being to the point where I finally just said, you know what, I'm done. And from that moment on, I really haven't had many toxic people in my life. And if they've turned toxic, I generally just cut them off because I just don't have the time for it. And I'm not trying to be a dick or, excuse me, a prick about it. I just don't have the time for it. And it's not healthy for them or me specifically.
Yeah. I think it just goes back to the question I asked earlier about, you know, who are the people that you spend the most time with, because you really are a product of all those energies in your life. And it's important to protect that and preserve that too.
Yeah. You know, again, as you get older, you if you're able to create some sort of harmony in your life, you do not allow other people to create disorder in your life, because that's more ego. That's more their own issues. That's more their baggage that they're trying to bring in or throw into your world. It's your job to protect that little world that you've created in the nicest way humanly possible, if you can. Sometimes you can't be nice about it. But yes, I would definitely agree that your inner sanctum should be very, very well protected, especially in a world like this. And I work in the film industry. Can you imagine?
Yeah. No, I was
gonna say. The kind of people that I deal with on a daily basis living in Los Angeles, you know, as much as they like to be they call them like the Zen capital of the US. I'm like, so there might be some Zen here, but there's other stuff too.
Well, just to wrap up, Alex, because it's been a really valuable interview and we've gotten a really lovely insight into your mindset around Mondays. But are there any kind of books or podcasts that you recommend that could help propel people or align them closer to enjoying their Mondays to not?
Well, obviously The Daily Gin, obviously.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Obviously, that's an amazing podcast.
That part's going at the front, just so you know.
Obviously, you should definitely do that. My podcast that I do called the Indie Film Hustle Podcast talks a lot about the filmmaking industry, but I also do a lot of inspirational stuff as well. I don't want to make it a plug about my stuff, but it does. I know a lot of people find a lot of value in that. The books that I would choose to kind of get through the Mondays is, first and foremost, before I even get to the book, I want to just say something, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Go for it.
If you're listening to this right now, and you are dreading your Monday because you are not happy with where you are professionally, where you are personally in your life, and you feel like you have no options, that is complete BS. You have a choice and always have a choice on what you can do. And I don't want to hear things and people that are saying that, oh, you know, I can't because of finances. Look, I've been there. I've been almost bankrupt in my life. You know, I was days away from signing paperwork before I pulled myself out of it. There's always an option. You have to find that option. And you've got to choose to make a difference in your life and choose not to be unhappy, because it is a choice to be happy or unhappy. Because there were people in Auschwitz who were dealing with it in a different way than others were. And I don't want to get really dark, but it is your choice to find that happiness with what you do. And the books I'm going to lay down for you will help you do that. The first book is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss.
Got that book? Tick.
That book was the book that allowed me to understand that there was an option. Tim laid it out very quickly. And by the way, it's not 4 hours. You work many more hours than 4 hours a week.
I was about to say that part he left out. But
you arguably, once you have your system up, you arguably could only work 4 hours a week if you chose to. But that book opened up the idea that this is possible, that other people are doing this, meaning an online business. And if you choose to go down this road, which is the path I chose, that book is instrumental because it shows you an example of what can be done. The second book I would give you is Crush It by Gary Vaynerchuk.
Got it. I got Crushing It, but Crush It I haven't read yet.
Crush is the first one. Crushing It's the sequel. Crush It is another book about marketing and branding of yourself and of your brand and company and social media and all this stuff. Gary lays it out in such a wonderful way. And you should read all of Gary's books because he is a force of nature without question. And believe it or not, the last book I would recommend is Autobiography of a Yogi.
Ah.
By Paramahansa Yogananda.
That one is actually on my shelf, but I haven't opened it yet.
So if you want to read it, you could read it. If you want to listen to the audiobook, which is read by Ben Kingsley, Sir Ben Kingsley. It is a wonderful book and could be arguably a life-altering book. That book is probably my favorite book of all time. And when Steve Jobs died, the only book on his iPod and an iPhone was The Autobiography of a Yogi. At his funeral, copies of Autobiography of a Yogi were given to everybody who attended. And everybody in the Apple organization has a copy as well. It is a very powerful book. the Beatles, when they met with Yogananda back in the 60s, 50s or 60s, changed their way of making music. Sgt. Pepper came out of that, you know, and all these amazing things because of their meeting and their understanding of what Yogananda brought. And basically, for anybody who doesn't know who Yogananda is, he's the man who brought yoga and meditation to the United States.
How long ago did he do that, Alex?
He brought that in the 30s. In the 30s and 40s, he came over as a young man, an Indian man. I forgot the city he's from in India. And as you can imagine, in the roaring 20s and 30s, a man with a turban walking the streets of New York, no one had ever seen anything like that before. And he preached and talked about meditation and yoga and all this stuff and brought it all over. But he soon realized that New York was not the place for him. The place he was going to make an impact was Los Angeles, Hollywood. So that's where he moved to Los Angeles. And he goes, that's where I'm going to get my message across. And he did. I can't tell you how many. You look him up. He knew everybody. Everybody knew him. He would talk to sold out arenas, just talking about meditation and yoga. So he is the reason why everyone's wearing yoga pants today.
He started a movement.
and he didn't wear yoga pants, but by bringing yoga over and bringing that kind of art, the yoga art and meditation over to the West, it has transformed the West to now where if I tell you I meditate for 2 or 3 hours a day, you don't go, what a weirdo. It's kind of much more accepted. And if, you know, if a guy is doing yoga now, it's more accepted. If a woman's doing yoga, like yoga is not this magical, weird thing. It is completely in the fabric of pop culture and society today. And he was the one that started it. And he was the only yogi ever to write an autobiography. So you really get an understanding of what yogis are in India and what they did. And it is a fascinating book. And it could be a life-altering book, depending on where you are in your journey.
I don't know if you actually heard that little ding while you were talking, Alex, but that was actually me buying the audiobook on my... No, because for me, like my girlfriend buys me lots of books. She's like, read this. This will be good for you. The last book I got was How to Be a Badass from Jen Sincero.
Nice.
A few people have recommended that I read it and she bought me the book, but I'm like, I think I need the audiobook version because, you know, it helps me while I'm commuting or doing walking or something like that. So I did get the audiobook version and I'm going to start reading that.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. And Ben Kingsley's voice is amazing. Listening to Sir Ben Kingsley talk, it's just like, he's like next to you. So I've listened to that book so, so many times. But after I read that book, the first time, I wasn't ready for it. And I'll be honest with you, when I read it the first time, which was in my 20s, I just couldn't grasp it. There's those kind of either movies or art or books, literature, things at a certain time in your life, you're just not ready for it. But when I read it recently within the last few years, you go, oh, I get it all now, or at least I get a lot of it now. And I'll read it in 10 years and I'll probably get something else out of it. And that's what a good Kubrick movie is, or a good piece of art is. It changes with you as you grow, because you look at it in a different way. So that book is my highest recommendation.
Fantastic, Alex. Well, Alex, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on Monday Mocha. Where can we find you?
My address is, no, I'm joking. You can find me at indiefilmhustle.com and on Facebook, Indie Film Hustle, Twitter, Indie Film Hustle, Instagram, iFilmHustle there. My personal website is alexferrari.com, which shows off my directing work and all the stuff I do in the film industry. But where I live most of my life is on Indie Film Hustle. And of course, my podcast is the Indie Film Hustle podcast, which you can find on iTunes. And I also have, for all the screenwriters and writers out there, the Bulletproof Screenplay podcast, which is dedicated specifically to the craft of storytelling and the business of screenwriting. And I might have some other podcasts coming out soon.
We'll actually include all those in the show notes for the Monday Mocha episode, so you can keep in touch with Alex.
Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.